Some replacement level dudes talking about their home team. Starting a Braves podcast was their daggum dream. They like Nick Markakis, even the long ball. One day they'll have more clout than Ken Rosenthal. Oh, you're listening to that Knockoma Nation podcast show. Oh,
Good morning, Jeff Donahue. Turn right now. Your Acura is in good condition. The temperature is at a perfect 69 degrees. Enjoy your day. It's another episode of the Knockoma Nation Podcast Show. I'm your host, Ken Hendricks. That's Josh Brown and JT Holton. JT, how you doing, buddy?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Josh, how are you?
Troll on highway. Troll on along. Troll on daddy.
Troll on,
till you get back
till
home.
Till we get back home.
Troll on family. Troll on crew.
Hey, if you're listening out there,
troll
you should get you
JT
your own.
Like I asked you to do.
Knockoma Nation Trolling Company t-shirt from shop.spreadshirt.com/knockoma nation. It has a beautiful bass fish on the back of it, and it says Knockoma Nation or Knockoma Trolling Company, baiting the hook since 2017. And everybody knows we're master baiters of the hook. Go get you a shirt. Go get you a shirt. There's some other really cool shirts on there, too. We just released a brand new line. Check them out. Get you one. If you've been holding off, waiting for the Knockoma shirts that you want, these are the cool ones. Cool thing about our website, if you check it out, when you go on, if you kind of know the style you want, you can actually type it at the top. But when you're looking through the shirts, sometimes they just show the Knockoma logo on the front. So be sure you kind of click in, look at them, look at the back, and see the design on the back, that kind of thing. Also, you can pick any color shirt you would like to go with the design. And for most of the designs, we have a light-colored shirt version and a dark-colored shirt version so that the text works on either kind of shirt that you pick. So look around, find the one you like, and order you a shirt. And we have sizes all the way up to, I think it goes all the way up to nearly 6X if you're interested in some of the different shirts.
If
shirt
you're
designs.
Yokozuna.
So, hey. No, I'm not here to judge. If you want the shirt, we'd love for you to buy it. So, that being said, fellas, did you watch the finale of The Last Dance?
Hell
with
yeah,
Jordan?
I did. I actually have all 10 episodes saved, and I'm going to rewatch them in a binge session at some point.
Oh, nice.
I can't wait.
Nice.
That would be good, I bet, to be able to see them and not have the week break between, and
I'm just going to nerd out from noon to midnight one day.
Yeah. Can we talk about the fact that not only was Michael Jordan the greatest basketball player of all time, but that man has the most perfectly shaped cranium of any human being to walk the planet. He doesn't have the little turkey neck at the back of his head back here. You know, like when you shave your head, how you get the little turkey neck bump back there, little log.
Like a pack of, hot dogs in the back of your neck.
Right. He has none of that. You don't shave your head either, Josh.
Well, I can feel it, though.
Fellas.
JT's got a good shaped head.
Fellas.
JT has a fair-shaped head. It still does not even come close to matching the bald perfection
that
is
Michael
Jordan's.
Look at that gleam off my head. It looks fantastic.
Jeff Schultz has a nice
It does
bald
look good.
Head. Have you seen Jeff Schultz's
head?
Yes,
but his is not intentional, I don't think, Josh.
Well.
I mean, just saying.
Yeah, okay.
I wonder if Michael is actually bald at all. Probably not. It's probably just the look.
I think it was receding, and he just beat it to the punch.
Maybe so. What was your favorite part from this week's episode? We had the wrap up, of course, in the final episode, but then they also had the good series talking about the Utah Jazz and
three favorite moments. Him and Reggie Miller.
Oh, it was
Reggie
so
Miller
good.
Is so good. He's just such a good character. He's got such a good personality. He's a weekly guest on the Dan Patrick Show, and is just he's fantastic.
Have you guys ever seen the Star Trek character called the Ferengi? That has like really sharp teeth. Have you ever seen
Absolutely
it?
Absolutely not.
What oh, let that? Me send you a picture because I swear that Reggie Miller is actually a Ferengi. It may not seem it, but
he's got alien-like features. Long neck,
he does.
Long limbs. He's very skinny. He looks alienish.
Oh, your mic's rattling a little bit again.
Son of a beast thing.
Unfortunately, JT's mic cut out again for this episode. We've got it resolved for all future episodes, but we make do with what we can this week. Thanks.
Wow. Sent you guys a beautiful picture of a Ferengi there. That's Reggie Miller, I'm telling you. Like, if you take the crazy head off of it and just take a gander at it, what do you think?
That does. It looks like a Reggie Miller caricature. Yeah. Wow.
Seriously, like, I mean.
Wow.
It's the teeth. It's the mouth and the teeth,
it
man.
It really is. Yeah.
Yeah. I've always thought he looked like a Ferengi, which is just weird. But anyway, It's a little bit the nose, too. Reggie's kind of got a wide nose, you know. He's kind of got the wide nose that goes with the teeth and the mouth and everything. Anyway, Reggie was a very good basketball player.
He was awesome.
He's probably way underrated in how high he should probably go in the all-time list.
Yeah.
In my opinion. He was crazy good. Had he played in a real basketball city, and no offense to Indiana, but
it's like the mecca of basketball.
Right, I agree. But it does not have the national fandom of like a Knicks or a Lakers. I'm not saying they're not. I'm just saying like people in Georgia never heard about the Pacers until the finals for the most part. Right?
That's like, fair. That's fair.
You didn't get them as game of the week or any of that kind of stuff. That's what I'm getting at. Yeah,
so I like the part where he made the game winning shot and kind of pushed off the other guy, and the guy's momentum was already going that way. But just
oh yeah, 100%. Let's be honest, every great shooter gets that call. You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, if a ref does make a call there, then everybody's screaming at the ref, making himself the center of the of a game that he shouldn't have been. Yeah, exactly.
My favorite part.
Because if Kobe's making that shot, if Tim Duncan's making that shot, which he wouldn't be, but I'm just saying, like, Steph Curry's making that shot, it's not a foul on any of them either. So, you know.
Steve Kerr, he nailed it.
He nailed it when he said he was like John Paxson 2.0. I mean, that's 100% what he was, you know. I will say this. I think John Paxson was better than Steve Kerr. I'm just saying, I think actual skill. Now, I'm not talking about coaching. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about like playing on the court. I think John Paxson was better than Steve Kerr. That's just my
favorite part was when Rodman and Malone were going after it. And
oh yeah.
I mean, they were pushing each other down. And yeah, the slap of the butts. I mean, that you never see that, dude. Like that, you never see that happen anymore. I don't think. The way they were literally just pushing each other.
Yeah, what about Rodman leaving in the middle of that? I forgot about that whole
wrestle.
Thing where he went
to go wrestle with Hogan.
Yeah, I do too. I didn't realize it was in the middle of the finals, though. Like, I didn't remember any of that.
That was crazy. That was crazy.
Yeah. I definitely never thought he was – I thought it was like an intentional gimmick. Like, I wasn't connected to SportsCenter at the time, so – like, when I saw him show up on NWO, I figured it was, hey, the finals are going on. NBA wants a plug for the finals, so they set up for Rodman to go on. I didn't realize he just went AWOL and showed up at wrestling, you know. And what was hilarious was he referenced that, JT, but then, what was it, like 3 minutes later? Yeah, you'll have to listen back. Listen back, because he talks about WCW, and then like 3 minutes later, he's talking about something else, and he references, oh, no, I know what it was. He doesn't actually say it. When they win the title, when they win the game, Rodman looks at the stands and does the crotch jab, like from Degeneration X. Yes, that's what it was, right. Like, that's what it was. I remember that. So, yeah, it got two words for you, basically. Yeah, I thought it was kind of funny that both made it in the show. What was your other favorite moments from – this week specifically.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh. Oh. The story about his bodyguard, dude, about how he was like his second father. That was awesome.
Yeah, that was great.
That was amazing. Cool. And you learned that, like, I mean, you know, Jordan could have been a jerk in a way to his teammates. I don't think so, but, like, he could. I know what.
I'm sure he was an a-hole. Yeah.
Yeah,
I
don't think so.
If you were Scott, you hated him. Like, no. I don't know how you didn't.
I don't think that's being an asshole. I think we've got different definitions. To me, that's not an asshole.
He was 100% trying to be an a-hole.
I think he was funny, but anyways, you learned that he was, you know, he had a soft side to him. You know, he's you know, deep down, probably a pretty good guy.
I think Michael Jordan's very much a narcissist. Anybody that's that successful, it's hard not to be. Two, I'm not sure he ever really grew up. When you go to that level of stardom that fast, like, he feels like, as a 50-year-old man or whatever age he is now, he feels like he's still a kid. And what I mean by that is, like, he still thinks he could step out on the court and, well, I mean, he made a statement this week. Someone asked him, said, do you think you could beat your Charlotte Hornets players one-on-one? He's like, yeah, I probably could, but I don't ever do that because I don't want to destroy their ego. You know, like, Michael Jordan's like 50-something years old. He might beat him in one run to the basket, but, like, these guys, I love Michael, but he's not beating somebody at this point in his life in straight-up basketball. Yeah, horse, maybe. Maybe in horse, but just, I don't know. I'm just saying, like, 3-on-3, I don't think Michael wins straight up. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know. Anyway, some of what I'm saying is also him not growing up, as you see that, like, when he calls the guy at the middle of the night crying because he doesn't really have relationships for how to deal with what you were talking about, JT, like the baggage of his dad being murdered, of being alone, of not having friends, because he really doesn't. When your security guards are your friends, you really don't have friends. And I mean, even the guy that they kept interviewing that said Michael's closest friend and assistant or whatever, the white guy. And I don't doubt that they're friends, and I think there is something there, but it's just a whole different level from just natural friendship. Everything.
At this point, JT brought up the fact that Michael Jordan didn't have to contend with Twitter and the internet and all those things to be able to build his brand. Fantastic point.
Well, he didn't have any of that, but he did. And it's interesting. Maybe he had it better, JT. Maybe it was easier. And what I mean by that is SportsCenter's becoming a thing when Michael comes around, right? Like, it's starting to come into its own. But people aren't inundated with constant stuff like they are with Twitter. So top 10 plays, Michael Jordan makes it every week. And everybody remembers the Jordan play because there's not a new LeBron play tomorrow or there's not a new Kobe play tomorrow. It was the Jordan play, you know, and that's what we saw all week, you know, on SportsCenter. Then on top of that, like, he does get Space Jam movie. No one had done anything like that. I mean, not successfully. And I realize that's further on up in his career, but I'm just saying, like, there was no dream team before Michael's dream team. You know, the Olympics didn't have professionals in it. So maybe Michael did have a lot of the things. And even Nike in and of itself, he didn't have any competition. Like, once Air Jordan came out, it blew everyone off. Yeah, that's true. But then, and this is where Michael, like, nailed it and got in on it early. You did only see MJ. And then, though, JT, you saw MJ every day in a Nike commercial or a McDonald's commercial or somewhere else. So he was the only basketball player you ever really saw, was because he figured out how to jump into those markets. And, like, I mean, shout out to his agent. They were phenomenal at marketing him. You know, like, they were genius. Because before, the brand had almost marketed the athlete. So, like, if you were an Adidas guy or if you were a Converse guy, like, you wore Converses and that added credibility to you because you wore Converses, you know. So if you were in the Converse commercial, yes, they were trying to get your fans, but for the most part, like, everybody knew Converse was what you wore if you were in the NBA. But with Jordan, he became so big that Nike was not dependent upon their good shoe as much as they were dependent upon who Michael Jordan was as a brand. You know, it was just a whole new way of playing the game. And maybe that's what makes him so, you know, they talked about it. Michael was so good at staying in the moment, but I don't think it just means like in the basketball moment. I think he recognized almost every moment of his life what was going on, like whether it was branding or building his brand or preparing for next season or even like figuring out what people are going to do in the playoffs against him or how to like build himself bigger to deal with the Detroit Pistons. Everything was in the moment, and it wasn't, as much as he wants it to sound like it was all about playing, I think it was all about being the best, period. Like, in every area, you know. I don't know. I felt like this entire docuseries, in a weird way, you could tell Michael had his hand on it. Very, you know, it was all approved by him. Because nothing was brought up about Michael's odd women stuff, you know, because there was obviously, there was a lot of storyline about that that nobody touched, where Michael was known to be a bit of a partier with the ladies. You know, nothing talked about any of Michael's kids other than just a brief little, I mean, you saw them in some clips, but there was never any discussion of any of that kind of stuff. And then it felt like they sanitized. Even though it was unfiltered, it still felt sanitized because it didn't deal with a lot of NBA culture behind the scenes. Like, you know, yeah. The women, even drugs. And I know Michael was, yes. No, Michael wasn't. But I think there's a lot of guys around him that were, you know, that I mean, Karl Malone got a 13-year-old girl pregnant. So, like,
there's some... I saw somebody tweet that today. Or was it one of you guys texted that? Who said that?
I don't remember. But, yeah.
Somebody tweeted that. Oh!
Maybe Dylan tweeted
it?
I don't know. I saw somebody tweet it.
Brave Swear Jar tweeted that. Okay. And I was like, wait, what? Is that true?
JT pointed out that Karl Malone denied being the father until the child reached the WNBA, at which point he was like, oh, yeah, that's my kid.
What? Are you kidding me? Wait. So he knocked up a 13-year-old chick.
Supposedly, yes.
Supposedly.
As far as I know.
Girl had the baby. He denies he's the father until chick is a WNBA player, and then he's like, oh, yeah, I'm your dad?
What? Yeah. Well, see, it doesn't, and like, and this docuseries, it wasn't the point of it. So I get why they didn't go into all this, but I think like that's a contextual piece that people miss when they look at sports like NBA and even players. Like Josh, we were talking yesterday about players having this level of entitlement, like they feel like they got to get theirs, you know, and MLB players, players. Because they live at such an obscene level of stardom and money, the world is different for them. So, like, when people are like, oh, yeah, Pete Rose had a bunch of young girls for him, and that happened all, you know, and he would always have young girls around spring training that were underage and stuff. And I'm like, yeah, so did probably, like, every baseball player at that time that was at spring training, you know. There was – and I'm not saying they all did. I'm just saying, like, it was – athletes think they're above the law. They often have, you know, and it's not uncommon. And you see this a lot, like Magic Johnson, right? Magic Johnson gets AIDS because, and I read the story, women was his thing. So they would come back to the hotel and there would be a group of like 20 women or more groupies waiting there, and they would go up and like give them their number, and that they would give them like their room number, and those girls would go up to get autographs, and then it was like an all-night sex session sort of thing, you know, like, and that was the culture of the NBA. Some guys did drugs, some guys did women, some guys did gambling, you know, and it was all just like wide open, here we go, we're above the law, we're above the rules. And I don't think that has changed dramatically in sports as much as people want us to believe it has. I think most athletes think they're above the law when they make that kind of money. That's the reason you end up with guys like Jose Fernandez dying. A fantastic dude. Coke dies from a coke problem, you know. Hey, Josh, but I need your opinion on this new NFL thing. They are now suggesting the idea that if you hire a minority to be a part of your leadership, that you could possibly get extra draft picks for your NFL football team. Do you have any thoughts on, you know, hiring minorities in this sort of situation?
Here is why.
And how this all works.
Let me explain to you why. So I listened to CBS Sports Radio in Atlanta Saturday morning. Yep. I was driving around Waffle House, Home Depot, Goodwill. I had 680 The Fan on, which I guess is a CBS sports affiliate. And I listened to this dork talk about this very thing for like 3 hours. And the need for more minorities in coaching, you know, the quarterback position, mainly coaching in football and executives here and there. There are some, there's not enough. Here is why there are less African Americans in certain industries. Do you know why there's less African Americans in certain industries, Kenny? Do you know why?
I could guess, but let me hear your take.
This is why. Because they're a minority.
That's deep. That's deep, Josh.
I know, right? Did I just blow your mind? The reason
you do.
There are less African Americans in, just pick any field. Just pick a field. Healthcare.
Soccer.
The reason there's less African Americans is because they're a minority. So when do you understand?
But Josh, aren't like all the Latino players also a minority on the soccer field?
Well, soccer might have been a bad example. You asshole.
So well,
there are a lot
like,
of other there's some other factors
saying.
Too. Hang on, there are some other factors too.
I understand
too,
what and you're saying. Go ahead.
We've talked about there are other factors in baseball as well, and we talked about this before. You know, for the past 35 years, they've invested a bunch of their money into Latin countries and stuff like that. The MLB has what's called the RBI program, which is basically an inner city program. It's really cool, but it pales in comparison to, you know, the investments they make into these academies in like the DR, Panama, and these places. So what happens is in 1987, you had the most African Americans ever in Major League history. It was like 13.5% of MLB players in 1987 were African American. And that's when we grew up on, like, you know, Ricky Henderson, Dave Stewart, you know, Barry Larkin and you know, Bo Jackson, right? And now, because of what I just said, now it's like 5%. I think it's less than 5%. So, but yeah, when I hear there's not enough African American coaches in football and baseball, I just, like, I have a, and maybe it's a dumb, ignorant answer, but my answer is really, it's because they're minorities. There are less of them in America. There just are.
Yeah,
Let me say one more thing. I'm sorry. I don't think in the year 2020, I'm almost certain, I don't think that there is a franchise in sports that won't hire someone because of their race. I don't think that exists. I really don't. Call me crazy. I mean, obviously it's happened before in our history for sure. I'm not an idiot. I'm very aware of the history of baseball, and you know, I've got books behind me of the Negro Leagues and all that, but I don't think in 2020 that there's a football franchise that's making their decision based on race. I don't think so. I don't think so.
Yeah. I don't think so either. I do find it an interesting thing that I would like more information about. So, JT, maybe you can fill me in on this, but I would estimate that, what, about 50% or more of the NFL is African-American players? 70%. I figured it was pretty high. So if that's the case, they're not a minority within the sport. And I playing the sport doesn't automatically make you a coach, but a lot of coaches did play the sport, you know. So you know, that being said, there's what? I'm trying to think. There's probably five African-American head coaches. Right, right. I think a part of it, you know, exactly. And I think some of it is cultural expectation in the sense of it's evolving the front offices of the NFL or any coaching at any level is a very slow process. And what I mean by that is the coaching pool that exists has existed for like 25 years. So even if you're adding a lot of young black coaches into that and you're starting to get more and more of them into the pool, you've still got this big pool of like 75% of the coaches that have been around for forever. And maybe they're not coaching at the highest level, but if you've got 30 years experience versus a guy with 5 years experience, the likelihood of someone hiring you, the guy with 30 years experience, is more likely. You know what I'm saying? So there's a lot of cultural factors that like add into this. Does that make sense what I'm saying, JT and Josh? Does it like?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm curious. Okay, going back to the original deposit, I think it's insane to give draft picks just because you hire somebody that's of a certain skin color to affect the game. I think that's ridiculous and insane. That being said, I'm not necessarily opposed to things like the Rooney Rule, where it's like you got to interview more minority coaches, you know, and there's even been changes to the Rooney Rule apparently this week to where they're wanting them to interview even more minority candidates.
I think it diminishes. I think if you do that, if you operate that way, and you have to, if I am African American, and I am highly qualified, I'm just as qualified as anybody that's on the table, and I know the only reason I got that interview was because of my skin color, because they had to interview a certain number of minorities. I think that would diminish.
What if you felt like the only reason you didn't get it was because of your skin color?
Show me.
If you were equally qualified.
Does that guy exist right now?
I think he probably does.
Okay.
I think he probably does.
I don't.
I
hear
this
a bunch
is
of,
my explanation.
I
Josh.
Hear white guys saying that guy exists, but I don't hear that guy. And I could be wrong. I hear
I mean,
a bunch
of white
guys.
I think there's a lot of those guys that say they exist, but.
No. I don't think that there's black guys that have not been given a coaching opportunity now in 2020 because they're black. And at least at the major, like NFL level, I don't know. I don't see it happening. I
so
find it hard to believe.
Here's the part I do believe about that, Josh. The reason that some coaches are not qualified, put that Georgia Tech cup down. That's
sorry,
terrible.
I got it at a basketball game like 5 years ago.
The reason that the only reason some coaches aren't qualified is because they're black. And what I mean by that is if a white coach and a black coach have basically the same experience level as far as actual ability on the field.
Uh-huh.
But the white coach has 30 years of experience,
mm-hmm.
and the black coach has 5.
Mm-hmm.
The white coach will probably get the job because we lean towards giving the guy with 30 years of experience and saying that's very valuable, right? And I'm not even saying it's not. Maybe it is.
Yeah.
Maybe that makes him more qualified. But if 25 years ago the black guy couldn't get the job because he was black, then there's no way he can have 30 years of experience to be that guy at the NFL level right now. Do you see what I'm saying?
I got you.
So like,
makes total sense.
It's
yeah,
systemic,
sure.
and I'm not saying that the guy's not qualified or that anybody's looking at him and saying his actual talent and ability is less. I'm saying his resume may be weaker because he was black through that systematic process, you know. So, and my thing is this, I think anytime, whether you're talking about sports or jobs or, you know, minority Title IX stuff that goes on at colleges as far as hiring specific races and you know, having quotas from each race to have to fill to get onto your campus and all this kind of weird stuff, I think that's a problem. I think that's going too far. I think anytime the final result is you should hire someone because of the color of their skin or the sex that they are or whatever for most positions, I think that's ridiculous, okay? That being said, when you're talking about, like, the Rooney Rule, that's like if you interview – we want you to interview at least three. I think that's a different standard for me, and I'm okay with that standard. I'm okay with you forcing teams to think outside the box they've always thought in. I'm not okay with you telling them they have to hire one, you know, or even abundantly rewarding them for hiring.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
Someone just because of the color of their skin.
And it's so, I guess it's a weird thing to talk about, you know, and I guess I get tired of it because I see Kenny, you talk about it very sensibly. And I mean, your points make total sense, but there's just so much all the time.
Victimhood?
You know, yeah, you know, and no matter what industry it is, it's always like there needs to be more minorities. We need more minorities, and why? And the implication is always the reason there's not enough minorities in this industry is because of racism, right? That's the implication, and it's like, mm-hmm. No, the reason there, if you want more minorities, then you got to have more of that person, at which point they're not going to be minorities. So in order for that to happen, like you need more of them, and at which point they're not like minorities anymore.
It's like going to a bluegrass festival. You're not expecting a lot of black people to be there. And it's not that it's not that black people don't like bluegrass. There's some that are very good at it. There's some black people that do fit that role. I mean, there's a guy that played at the Opry for years and years and years. You know, that being said, like, culturally, it's not part of the black culture, American black culture, to really be into bluegrass music. So it doesn't make bluegrass racist that there's not more black people in it. It just means they're not really interested in it. That's what I'm curious about with NFL, is there's a lot of black people interested in playing the sport. What's the disconnect between playing it and coaching it?
Yeah,
why is there not a greater?
I don't think I realize.
And I don't know.
I didn't realize
the answer. I'm not saying it's racist. You know, I'm just
And I think that most, if not all, decision making execs and front office outfits think just the way JT just said. I really do.
I don't think they did 20 years ago. And the reason I disagree with that. You end up with a lot of these billionaire owners were old. And I mean old.
Yeah, and when you're old 20 years ago, you were that guy.
You grew up
in the
through the heart of racism. And even if you didn't mean to, you had a lot of biases built in. You know, we saw it with the owner that they kind of forced out with the what was the NBA team out west? The LA team, JT. The Clippers. Yeah. It had a lot of at the very least questionable racial statements that he's made throughout his history and different things, and they pretty much forced him out of the league. You could defend some of it, but when you're in a billionaire position, you just can't say stuff like that. But he's also the old billionaire that can say whatever he wants because he's an old billionaire. You know, you kind of have that same sort of thing with NFL teams and MLB teams and every other place, you know. But I do think more and more of that is filtering out as NFL's become less and less of this elite boys club. You know what I'm saying, Josh, with like all the billionaire bros that were all just boys club. And now it's like more of, I guess you would say it's more of a business. NFL's not as much a hobby that some billionaire owns as much as it is now a business that is ran like a business. And I think that transition's happened in the last 20 years. I mean, you see the last vestige of it, right? Like, Jerry Jones is like the billionaire's boys club last stand, you know, where he picks whatever he wants, he does whatever he wants, and he doesn't run it exactly like a business. He runs it the way he wants to according to his own thoughts and money and pocketbook, you know. Whereas the Atlanta Falcons don't really operate that way anymore. I mean, Arthur Blank basically has a team and says, hey, y'all go do it. Here's a blank check, literally, no pun intended, to go get what you need, you know, that kind of thing. So, I don't know. It's interesting. I'm not saying... I definitely, though, fall on the side of I don't think you should reward teams for doing the right thing that way. It seems really dumb. to force a team and try and reward.
It does.
Awkward behavior.
It seems dumb. And if you're that black guy who got that job, I'd feel like it wouldn't feel the same, man.
Maybe they hired me just to get a draft pick. You know, maybe that's why I beat out the other guy. Right. But then again, maybe you say, "Hey, I'm an NFL coach now. I don't really care."
that's
the other side of that, right? Like, I don't care why you thought I was better. I'm now an NFL coach, and you're not. So, I think it's pretty easy to see coaches that are good coaches with bad teams. But like you say, JT, I think a lot of it is circumstantial. Like, to me, Mike McCarthy is an average coach that's had good teams. Whereas Andy Reid, up until being with the Chiefs, was a really good coach that had decent teams, but never like out of this world talent. You know what I'm saying? Right, right. But I don't think that was – I mean, that was – a lot of that was Andy Reid. You know what I'm saying? Like, that got him there. I think you see the same kind of thing. Like, Jason Garrett was a guy that was just an average coach that had pretty good talent but was an average coach. So it's always interesting to see those guys. You know, Jeff Donahue's going to, like, probably wreck when I say this, but it's pretty obvious – that the 49ers coach is a very good coach. Yeah, Kyle is a very good coach. He just sucks at the second half of Super Bowls. But some of that you also have to say is circumstantial, like you were talking about. Like, it's circumstantial that all those weird things came back to bite him in the butt. And maybe it was some bad decisions on his part, sure. But, like, it's still weird. You know, like, you could just as easily see him. We could be talking about Kyle Shanahan having multiple Super Bowls, you know. So it's weird, too. Those guys stand out. But, like you say, I think you're right. 75, 80%, maybe higher of coaches is just circumstantial. Anyway, speaking of circumstantial, that's what this episode's been. Thanks for hanging out with us today. Jeff Donahue, you are about to arrive at your destination. Please have a wonderful day. Unbuckle your seatbelt before stepping out of the car and park the Maserati next to the Porsche, please. Thank you.
God bless.
Thanks for listening to the nation's leading replacement-level podcast. Nakahoma Nation is brought to you by Nakahoma Nation patrons. To become a patron, visit patreon.com/Nakahoma Nation. For new episodes and content, visit NakahomaNation.com. Find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at NakahomaNTN. Special thanks to research assistant Braves Auctions Guy and spiritual advisor John D. Howard. See you next week, knuckleheads.